welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Happy holidays! This week we have the story of Christmas seals, and after that, we have Shirley Temple and Nelson Eddy in Bluebird, with an extra treat afterwards by Shirley Temple. Cavalcade dramatized interesting bits of history for radio listeners. I think you will enjoy hearing the history of Christmas seals. This show was broadcast in 1936 to tell the story of the start of a charity to fight tuberculosis by Emily Bissell in 1907. You'll feel very fortunate to live in our present times when you think about what a deadly disease it was. Enjoy Cavalcade of America, the story of Christmas seals. First broadcast December 9th, 1936 on NBC.
Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont. That will be dramatized this evening on the Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont, is the story of the Christmas seal. In our audience here at our radio theater is the woman who started the Christmas seal on its way in America 30 years ago, Miss Emily Bissell. We are happy to have her with us, and we would like to have you meet her at the end of our program. As our story is told this evening, we believe you will not only gain a better understanding of the work made possible by Christmas seals, but will make doubly sure that every Christmas card or letter or package you send carries at least one of these stamps. As our overture, Don Voorhees and the DuPont Cavalcade Orchestra bring us a selection of Cole Porter's music from the new motion picture, Born to Dance. evening, the Cavalcade of America brings you the story of a devoted Red Cross worker, her idea for Christmas seals, and the growth of a magnificent campaign for the better health of this country. We take you back to the winter of 1907 in the city of Wilmington, Delaware. Miss Emily Bissell, secretary of the local Red Cross, calls on a young widow.
Good morning, Mrs. Lang.
Oh, Miss Bissell, come right in. I was hoping you'd get here.
I got your note and I came just as soon as I could. I'm on my way to a Red Cross meeting.
I know you're busy, Miss Bissell, but...
Well, what is it, Mrs. Lang? Not bad news about Carrie?
No, it isn't that. The baby's fine. All she needed was to get to the country, have fresh air and better food than I could afford to give her.
Oh, I'm so glad she's doing well, Mrs. Lang. You know, I think the 3 or 4 months in our pavilion will send her back to you greatly improved in health.
I hope so. Miss Bissell, the thing we're afraid of has happened. Oh, the doctor said yesterday that Johnny has one lung affected, too.
Oh, Mrs. Lang, I'm so sorry. Poor, brave little Johnny.
All day yesterday, I tried to realize it. Miss Bissell, since my husband died 2 years ago, and my little girl got sick, now my boy, it doesn't seem fair.
Now, you mustn't despair like this. After all, we were afraid of it. We didn't get Carrie away from this house here soon enough.
But he was always so strong. I never thought that he could...
Well, we'll get Johnny out to the pavilion right away. Today, if I can manage it.
Well, that's the trouble. Johnny can't go.
Why not?
The doctor said he couldn't. There's no more room, not a single bed.
Oh, why, that's ridiculous. Why, there may be some temporary mix-up out there, but there'll be a place for Johnny. I'll see to that.
Oh, thank goodness, Miss Bissell. I was sure you'd help me.
Why, that pavilion was started just to help poor people with lung trouble, Mrs. Lang. And it's going to cure Johnny, I know. Now, I'll go right down and see Dr. Wales.
Mom! Oh, hey, Mom!
There he is now. Oh, Johnny!
Oh, hello, Miss Bissell. I didn't know you were here.
Come here to me a minute, Johnny.
He shouldn't be up, but it's so hard to keep him put.
Miss Bissell, do you know what the doctor told me? He said I'm sick in my chest like Sister was.
Yes, I know, dear. And you'll have to learn to be quiet for a while. That's hard for a little boy, isn't it?
Well, it'd be easier if I could go out where my sister is.
And that's just where you're going. Well, I'd better get started for Dr. Wales' office right now. Goodbye, Johnny. You get back into bed now.
I will. I'll be waiting for you, Miss Bissell.
All right. Goodbye, Mrs. Lang. I'll hurry back.
Goodbye, Miss Bissell. Thank you so much.
Determined to see that Johnny is not denied the opportunity of entering the pavilion, young Miss Bissell hurries to Dr. Wales' office.
Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Joe.
Well, I see by your face that you've heard the bad news.
Well, what is it? What's the matter, Joe?
Oh, the pavilion is closing in 2 months.
Closing? But it can't. What's happened?
Well, there's no use blaming me, Emily, nor any of the 3 doctors working with me.
Oh, well, I'm not blaming you, Joe. But, well, there must be something you could do.
I barely support my own family. Like more of my time than I can afford to charity. I can't follow that with all the money I have.
No, of course not. But... Oh, you've worked so hard to start the pavilion. It was such a generous thing to do. You taught this city how to care for its sick. Now, if it's simply for the lack of a few $100s...
Oh, the lack goes deeper than that. When money is missing for a charity like this, it's only because the public lacks knowledge of the need. So many people consider tuberculosis hereditary and incurable and think nothing can be done about it anyway. So the worst pestilence in the world goes on unchecked.
Pestilence. Yes, it is a pestilence, Joe. I never thought of it just that way. I should have, though, because the Red Cross was organized to help in war, pestilence, and famine. Maybe they can do something.
Well, you're the secretary of the Delaware Red Cross. It's up to you to start something.
But, Joe, you mean you want me to go out and find money for you? To manage everything?
Yes. I've selected you to get this money, and I feel sure I'm right. It's only possible to stamp out a disease when people in general, not just doctors alone, join a health crusade to destroy it.
Well, I wish there was some way to end tuberculosis completely.
Well, since tuberculosis is preventable, there are ways. teach people how to safeguard their health. That's a matter of public education, Emily. So perhaps when you've finished a local campaign, you could start a national one.
You're outlining a rather large program for me, Joe. And all this talk of prevention is too late to help people like little Johnny Lang.
Yes. The thing we have to worry about right now is our local problem. How to care for Johnny Lang and the others. So it's still up to you, Emily.
I can't think how to start going about getting money.
Well, you must have some ideas.
Oh, dozens, but none any good. I thought of fancy dress parties, or a raffle, or tag day. But the trouble is that people are so busy getting ready for Christmas that they haven't time to think of anything else. They're all buying presents and getting off their letters and their cards. And... now, there's an idea.
You thought of something?
Did you happen to see an article in the Outlook recently by Jacob Reese of New York?
No, I don't think I did.
Well, it told about a plan used in Denmark for raising funds for charity. They issued government stamps, rather like postage stamps. And people buy them and put them on letters to help a children's sanatorium. You see, it supports the sanatorium's needs, and it spreads the message.
Stamps. Well, might be something in it.
Of course, the government doesn't run charities here. And besides, we need education more than money in this. Now, let me think. Let me put things together. Pestilence. The Red Cross. Education. Christmas. Joe, I'm getting an idea. A big one.
Well, you decide about it, Emily. You're a sensible, energetic young woman. Any town that hasn't got a few women like you in it might as well go back to grass.
Oh, yes, but you ought to help me decide what...
Excuse me, Dr. Wales. Sam's been waiting 10 minutes to drive you over to that tonsillitis clinic.
Oh, all right, Ruth. Emily, I have to rush off. Since this cold wave, you won't find a doctor in town who will have time to help you, but good luck.
Well, I don't know where I'd get money to print the stamp.
Borrow it from somebody.
And I suppose you have to design a stamp before you print it.
Do it yourself.
All right. I will. A holly wreath, the Red Cross, Merry Christmas. That's easy enough. Well, everyone in town will laugh and say I've got some silly notion that won't work. But I don't care what they say. I'll be too much haunted by what a failure will mean to Johnny Lang and the others. Maybe that fear will help me make it a success.
With the financial backing of two kindly friends, which amounted to only $40 and was never called on, Miss Emily Bissell designed a stamp and found a printer who would wait for his money. She wrote to Washington and got permission to use the insignia of the National Red Cross for her venture. On December 7th, the day the sale in Wilmington is to start, she pays an early morning call.
Johnny? Johnny, are you in here?
Oh, Miss Bissell. Sure, I'm here. Mom, what?
Oh, maybe I woke you up. If I did, I'm sorry.
No, ma'am, you didn't. I was just lying here, thinking. Gee, all the packages look like Santa Claus.
No, Johnny, these aren't Christmas packages. I'm on my way down to the post office. I've got some signs to put up and some boxes. Look. Look here. Can you read this sign?
Christmas stamps. 1 penny apiece. Issued by the Delaware Red Cross to stamp out the white plague.
That's right.
What's this underneath, the poem? Put this stamp with message bright on every Christmas letter. Help the tuberculosis fight and make the new year better. These stamps do not carry any kind of mail, but any kind of mail will carry them.
Well, that isn't much of a poem, Johnny, but it was the best we could do in a hurry. And anyway, we won't be able to judge this poem until we see what it does for you.
Is it going to do something for me?
That's what I hope. You know, we saw the Postmaster General in Washington. And they're letting us sell these stamps, see? With the Red Cross and Merry Christmas on them. I can sell them right in the post office. Not at a stamp window, but at a booth in the corridor, all trimmed for Christmas.
Yeah, but what for?
To get money. So that you can go out to the pavilion. And so the others can stay there.
Just a little stamp.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid you feel about my plan like everyone else does, Johnny. You think poor Miss Bissell's got a bee in her bonnet.
No, I don't think anything's wrong with you.
Fine. That makes me feel better. The other people think I'm just plain... Well, never mind. I've got to go now, Johnny, so I'll just wrap up this sign again.
I'm very glad you came to see me.
I just had an idea for some reason that... Well, that it would bring me luck if I stopped in here. And all day long, no matter how many people walk by these stamps with their heads in the air and don't buy any, I'll think about you and keep on trying.
Mom says you'll do your best.
Johnny, would you like to help me, too? Take one of these stamps, will you?
Sure. Should I tear it off?
That's right. Now, you keep it by you, Johnny. You might say a little prayer.
Pretty looking. Merry Christmas.
If people will only buy them, that's what we'll have. A Merry Christmas.
Emily Bissell quickly found that she was trying to sell stamps to a public unprepared to understand them. But the newspapers were her best helpers. All the Delaware papers played up the stamps. Soon after the sale starts, she goes to Philadelphia and talks there to the Sunday editor of a paper that has interested itself in health campaigns.
I'm sorry I can't use your story on the stamps in our Sunday section, Miss Bissell. But this isn't exactly the season of the year that people want to be depressed. There's no connection between a terrible disease like tuberculosis and a great holiday like Christmas.
Oh, but there is. There is a real connection. Well, when people are filled with goodwill, they want to pass it on. I'm certain I'm right about that.
Well, even if you are, this stamp idea is a little unusual.
You don't have to explain. You think it's silly.
Well, perhaps it'll work. I don't want to criticize.
It won't work, and we have plenty of newspaper space. One of my business friends loaned me two men to prepare news material. Both of them say we must get more publicity if we can, or we can't sell enough stamps.
And I don't think our interest in ending disease is quite the same, Miss Bissell. You're working for a local charity. We're interested in a national campaign.
Yes, but these stamps could be used anywhere. Don't you see?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, then I haven't explained it clearly. I'm not discouraged, though. You see, we're selling stamps at home. But the stamp is bigger than that. Perhaps the lives of so many people, some of them little children, depend on this. The stamp is a symbol, the banner of a great battle against death.
I wish I could do something. I'm sorry.
Well, I know you're anxious to get back to your work. Thank you for seeing me anyway.
Thank you for coming in. Goodbye.
Good day.
Can I do something for you, lady?
Oh, that office door says Mr. Hodges. Isn't he the one who writes The Optimist?
Sure. It's a good column, too.
Yes, I always read it. I'm an optimist myself. I'd like to talk to Mr. Hodges.
Oh, that's easy. Mr. Hodges likes to meet people who read his column. Hey, just a minute, please. Hey, Mr. Hodges.
Hello, Danny.
Lady out here in the hall to see you.
Why keep her in the hall? Door in.
All right. Come right in, ma'am. Mr. Hodges ain't busy.
Well, I suppose I may as well. How do you do, Mr. Hodges?
Well, please come in, Miss. Danny didn't give me your name.
I'm Emily Bissell of Wilmington, but I won't take up your time. I happened to mention to the office boy that I liked your column so much, and I wanted to meet you.
Well, don't go away. Sit down. Any writer likes to talk with his readers, you know.
I'm a rather low-spirited public right now. I've just been asking a favor of your Sunday editor.
Oh, and didn't he give it to you?
No.
Well, perhaps I could help you some way, Miss Bissell.
Mr. Hodges, did you ever have an idea that was certain was perfectly wonderful and then find out that most people couldn't see it?
Well, maybe you haven't taken your idea around to enough people yet. Is it something you're writing?
Oh, no. No, it's a selling plan for a charity campaign. Would you like to read the outline I've written up about it?
Well, thank you.
I was afraid I'd get tongue-tied with the Sunday editor, so I put my chief arguments on paper. But I used them all and still...
A campaign against tuberculosis, huh? This paper's very much interested in that.
I know. That's why I made the trip up here to Philadelphia. You see, the campaign in Delaware is going well. Club women and the schools and the press are helping. But I thought that an influential paper was already interested in the subject. We could go far. Isn't my idea bigger than Delaware or Philadelphia? It's the new tuberculosis Christmas seal stamp.
Stamp? Could I see the stamp you've designed?
Yes, I've got some in my purse. There.
Thanks.
I'm trying to place it in the Philadelphia stores, but they're not enthusiastic. If I could just find one person who would agree with me on the possibilities of selling seals, I'd feel better.
You want to find just one person who believes in Christmas stamps? Well, you found him. Pardon me a second.
Danny.
What is it, Mr. Hodges?
Go tell the editor I've got to see him right away.
What shall I tell
you? Well,
I
saw the editor, Mr. Hodges.
You saw the Sunday editor. Now you'll see the managing editor. You see, Miss Bissell, we've been hunting for months for a way to dramatize the fight against tuberculosis. And we knew that when we found it, it would be some perfectly simple thing that we'd wonder, why didn't we think of that a year ago? Well, you found it. How many stamps have you got with you?
Why, about 10.
Well, we'll want 50,000 for Philadelphia.
50,000? But that's all we had printed.
Then you'll have to print some more. Hurry back to Wilmington. Telephone me tonight.
Oh, I will. Why, oh, what grand news this is going to be for the people back home. And for Johnny Lang and the others. It's all the Christmas presents they'll need.
See, Mr. Hodges, the boss says, what's it all about? He's kind of busy.
Tell him to put everything aside. We found a way to help stand out tuberculosis.
The faith of a handful of people launched the Christmas seals to end tuberculosis. The first year's sales totaled $3,000. The next year leaped to $135,000. The sale of Christmas seals over the 29 years the campaign has been going on has amounted to $83 million. And the educational results? Tuberculosis has dropped from the first cause of death in this country to the seventh. In every city, there are scores of men and women who have Christmas seals to thank for their present happiness. This year, on a street in Wilmington...
Oh, just a minute, driver. I think I see someone I know going down the street.
You better get in the cab right now, mister. I haven't much time to catch your train.
Why, it is she. You wait here just a minute.
Okay.
Hey, ma'am. I beg your pardon. Aren't you Miss Bissell?
Why, yes, I am. Perhaps I ought to know you, but...
Oh, just look hard for a minute. Of course, I put on about 3 feet and over 100 pounds, but...
Why, Johnny Lang. Why, it must be 30 years since I've seen you. Ah, you don't look any more like little Johnny Lang.
I should think not. I'm as fit as a fiddle. Say, meeting you is great luck. I'm only in Wilmington for a day. Came east on a business trip.
Well, tell me, how did your family make out in California?
We've been fine. Mother's pretty well along now, you know, and Carrie's teaching school up in Seattle, and...
Fine.
Me... I've got a wife and 3 kids, just an old married man.
Oh, John, I'm so glad to hear it.
Remember the day you came in to see me on the way to your first Christmas seal sale?
Oh, do I remember? I was never so thrilled in all my life.
And you gave me the first seal for luck.
And if you ask me, John, it was lucky.
It was lucky for me, all right. And every time I see a Christmas seal sale, I remember that it's going to be lucky for some other fellow. Why, I'll bet you're on your way now to the nearest stand to ask how the sales are coming on.
Well, as a matter of fact, John, I am. We hope for a good year. You know, John Lang, you ought to buy some seals.
No, you can't catch me there. I got them in my pocket someplace.
Oh, that's fine.
Honestly, Miss Biffle, I don't know how to express the thanks I owe you personally and the other people who helped me.
The people you're indebted to... were the people who bought seals that first year, John. And we'll never know who they were.
Well, to them, and to you, and to everyone who helped, thanks.
I better hurry, sir. Better hurry.
There's my taxi driver. Reminded me I have to catch a train if I want to spend Christmas with my family.
Oh, well, you run on, John. Don't let me keep you. And give my love to your family.
Thanks.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And good luck to your Christmas seal.
Millions have been brought back to health. Millions have avoided the tragedy of illness. But the work has by no means ended. Tuberculosis still takes more lives between the ages of 15 and 40 than any other disease. The national and local tuberculosis associations throughout the country continue their work untiringly, confident that the American public, which has brought them so far on the road to success, will continue in its faith and generosity. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce the lady that made all these things possible, the organizer of Christmas Seals as an increasing force for combating tuberculosis in America, Miss Emily Bissell.
I am delighted to be present this evening to hear the story of 30 years ago. I assure you that it is accurate. I have known many young Johnnies and Carries, once ill, who are now leading healthy, normal lives. Children of today are much less likely to be infected because of the educational work of the Christmas seal. It is the great symbol of prevention and cure. It is cutting down the death rate between the ages of 15 and 25. For this year, for the first time, no one under 19 has died of tuberculosis in Delaware. I want to thank personally every one of you who have helped us carry our campaign forward through this interesting dramatic sketch.
Thank you, Miss Bissell. This evening, we salute those marchers in the cavalcade of America whose work makes life healthier and thus happier for all. Any effort to save lives and guard the public health concerns everyone. Let us therefore review the advances that have been made. A baby boy born in 1850 could expect to live on the average about 38 years. Today's child can look forward to a lifespan of 60 years or more. How has this been done? One of the factors in lengthening our average span of life has been the remarkable forward strides of medical and surgical science. Another has been the achievements of chemical research in producing new and better medicines and other products that serve the medical profession. Doctors say that tuberculosis, for instance, can be cured in virtually every case if treated early. One reason the death rate from tuberculosis used to be so high was that doctors, with the methods of diagnosis then known, had difficulty in detecting its presence in time. The discovery of X-ray gave the medical profession an important new tool to aid in diagnosing tuberculosis and other respiratory diseases. By taking X-ray pictures of the lungs, doctors can detect the presence of tuberculosis in its various stages. DuPont research has contributed to this forward step by perfecting X-ray film that enables doctors to get clearer pictures of the human anatomy than ever before. Another important aid to physicians in diagnosing trouble is the group of products known as bile. Biological stains. These coloring compounds, when applied to samples of body tissue and the like, make it possible to see, by means of the microscope, tiny organisms such as streptococci that otherwise would not be visible. These stains thus enable doctors to diagnose a variety of diseases in time to check further ravages. Once we were dependent upon Europe for almost all the biological stains we needed. And when this supply was cut off during the war, our physicians and hospitals faced a grave situation. Today, DuPont supplies a variety of dyes for these important diagnostic aids. The DuPont Company also makes chemical ingredients for many of these products that aid in the conquest of disease. Its contributions to the protection of human health give deep and lasting meaning to the DuPont phrase, better things for better living through chemistry. The man who had two careers, the interesting story of Samuel F.B. Morse, artist and inventor, will be the subject of our broadcast when next week at this same time, DuPont again presents The Cavalcade of America. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have Screen Guild Theater, Bluebird, with Nelson Eddy and Shirley Temple. During the performance, as Temple was singing "Someday You'll Find Your Bluebird," a woman arose from her seat and brandished a handgun, pointing it directly at Temple. Police were able to grab the handgun and arrest the deranged woman, and the cast carried on as if nothing had happened. The writer of the 1908 play the movie was based on, Maurice Maeterlinck, was listening in on shortwave radio. Enjoy Screen Guild Theater, Bluebird, first broadcast December 24th, 1939, on CBS.
Miss Shirley Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Eddy. What do I do now?
Well, anything you say, Shirley. It's your program. But if I might make a suggestion, as one singer to another, how about a song?
All right, Mr. Eddy. I'll sing "Someday You'll Find Your Bluebird."
Good.
Someday you'll find your bluebird. Wait your turn. Bide your time. For when you find your bluebird, life will be so sublime. It may be right near you, or maybe worlds apart. When love comes, you'll find it on the windowsill of your heart. And then you'll hear your bluebird sing a song of happiness to you.
Some 30 years ago, the famous Belgian author Maurice Maeterlinck wrote a play and called it The Bluebird. It must have carried a message the world sorely needed, for within a few years it was known and loved in every corner of the earth, by young and old alike. It's been acted in every country, in every language, and on almost every stage, until to the whole world The Bluebird has come to be the symbol of happiness. And now it's been brought to the screen by Darryl Zanuck and 20th Century Fox as the most magnificent and spectacular Technicolor production of the year, with Shirley Temple in the role of Meikle. And tonight, at this very moment in faraway France, Maurice Maeterlinck, now 77 years old, is seated at his shortwave radio, waiting to hear Shirley Temple bring his immortal story to life again. Did you like working in The Bluebird, Shirley?
Oh, yes, Mr. Pryor. I loved it. Better than any picture I was ever in, I think. Do you know The Bluebird, Mr. Pryor?
Oh, of course. It's the story of Meikle and Tyltyl, a girl and boy who lived over 100 years ago, if I remember correctly.
You remember, all right. And do you remember the Royal Forest? That's where the story begins. Oh, it was beautiful. The most beautiful forest I've ever seen. The green pine trees were all glistening with snow. Oh, there was lots of snow, because it was the day before Christmas. And I remember my brother, Tyltyl, and I were walking through the forest. The birds were singing all around us. They were very happy, because no one was supposed to hunt them in the Royal Forest. But I did. I guess I wasn't a very nice little girl. Tyltyl and I set a trap. And then we hid behind a tree. And pretty soon, a little thrush came to eat the crumbs we'd spread. He came closer and closer. And there, we had him in the trap. And all the other birds flew right away. We were pretty excited, too. But suddenly, we heard a horn. It was a royal forester. He waved his hand and shouted at us. And I yelled, "Come on, Tyltyl! Run, run! It's the royal forester!" too, all the way back to the village. We didn't slow down till we were passing Angela's house. It wasn't much of a house, because Angela's mother was very poor, and Angela was sick and lying in bed near the window. I guess she wondered what we were carrying in the basket, because she opened the window and called to us.
Mito? Oh, Mito.
Oh, hello, Angela.
What have you got in the basket, Mito? Something for Christmas?
It's a bird, a very rare bird. It's a thrush, we think. I trapped it in the royal forest.
Oh, I've always wanted a bird like that. I don't suppose you wouldn't give it to me, would you?
I should say not. I've promised this bird to another little girl for Christmas.
Have you? Who?
Who do you suppose? Me. Come on, Tiltil.
Yes, we'd better hurry. Mommy and Daddy don't like it when we're late for dinner.
Oh, I'll show them my bird, and they'll forget to scold us.
Where have you children been? What kept you?
Look, Mummy, we caught the most beautiful bird.
There's no excuse for being late to supper. Now go wash your hands.
Yes, Mummy. Down, Tylo, down.
Your mummy had to set the table, Meetle. Did you forget the time?
You know, Daddy, I think the village clock is slow.
You hear that, Mummy? The village clock was slow.
She has eyes, hasn't she?
You saw it was growing dark.
Well, yes. But Angela Burlingo stopped us. I had to talk to her. She's sick, you know.
Then we looked in at the rich children's house.
Oh, just for a second, Daddy.
Never mind all that now. Now, come on. Take your places at the table. There. We're ready for grace.
For what we are about to receive, and for all thy bounteous blessings, O Lord, make us truly thankful.
Amen.
Amen. Mabel, catch up your bird. Tylet, get away from there. Keep away from my bird. Get away, Tylet.
Haven't I told you, Meetle, not to trap birds in the woods?
But, Daddy, it's such fun. And what do you think, Mummy? Angela wanted me to give my bird to her.
Well, why didn't you? It would have been something to cheer her up. Oh, poor mite, sick in bed all winter.
It's not my fault she's sick.
It's your fault that you're selfish.
You've got so much that she hasn't, Meetle.
What have I got?
Health, for one thing.
What's that?
And a roof over your head, warm clothes to wear.
These old things.
And plenty to eat.
But nothing I like. Nothing good. Not like those rich children have. Cakes, candies, dolls to play with, pre-dresses, everything. I have nothing.
Stop it, Meetle. Stop it at once. Why, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I'm not ashamed. I hate it. I hate it all.
Meetle.
Another word and you'll go straight to bed. You're an ungrateful child.
I don't care. I'm so unhappy.
Of course you're unhappy. If you don't mend your ways, you'll never be happy. Never.
Oh, who's that?
Come in.
Oh, it's you, Wilhelm.
Well, sit down. Have some supper with us.
Thanks, but I have no time. I have bad news, I'm afraid.
What's wrong?
Orders to mobilize at once.
Mobilize?
Oh, no.
Soldiers are on the march again. We assemble in the village square tomorrow at noon.
I'll be there.
Good. Till tomorrow, then.
War.
Daddy, I don't want you to go.
I must go, dear.
Why do they have to have war? What makes war anyway?
The same thing that makes trouble everywhere. Greed and selfishness. Someone is not content with what they have.
But you're not like that, Daddy. Why should you have to go?
That's what's wrong about her, child. You can't be unhappy inside yourself without making others unhappy, too.
Come. Come now, children. Be off to bed. Daddy and I have many things to do. Good night, dear.
Good night, Mummy. I'm sorry for the way I behaved at supper.
Yes, yes, dear. Good night.
When Daddy said someone is not content, did he mean like me?
Well, like you are sometimes.
But I don't want to be like that, Mummy. Really, I don't.
I know, I know.
I don't know what makes me do it. Oh, Mummy, I'm so unhappy.
Oh, there, dear. You want to be happy, don't you?
Yes, Mummy. Like you. You're happy all the time, aren't you?
Well, nearly all the time, dear. Now go to sleep.
Don't worry, Mummy. Daddy will come back.
Yes. Yes, dear. Now sleep. Sleep.
Thank you.
coming in. Who are you?
I am Bérylune, the fairy Bérylune. I have come to help you find the bluebird.
The bluebird?
That's what I said. The bluebird. The bird that stands for happiness. You want to be happy, don't you?
Of course.
Then into your clothes, both of you. And be quick about it.
Look, Needle. You're all dressed. And so are you. Why, Telltale, even your boots are laced. She did it.
Come, don't stand there staring. There's no time to lose. But you must find the bluebird.
But where should we look for it?
In the past, in the future, everywhere.
But, ma'am, we're not allowed to go places alone at night.
There's your dog and cat. Take them.
But we'll get lost in the dark.
I'll take care of that. Light, you who give beauty to the earth, appear.
It's a queen. She came right out of the land, all covered with light.
I am light. Come to guide you, dear little friend. Where would you like to go?
We're not quite sure where to go. Diane said we must find the bluebird. We don't know where to look. She said in the past, the future, everywhere.
Perhaps we'd better start in the past.
But where is the past? Light, do you know the way?
Of course. The past is just behind us. I'll show you. Come.
Come.
Lies through there.
But that's a graveyard.
It's the only way to the past. You must leave from here, Needle. But take heed. It is now nearly midnight.
Oh.
You must be back within the hour. Otherwise, you will remain in the past forever. Goodbye now.
Aren't you coming with us?
No. Light has no business in a graveyard. But I'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting.
Thinking of us. Why, I'm beginning to feel quite strong.
Yeah, we're going to have visitors.
They seem quite near.
Yeah, now I can get on with carving my little figures. I've been at this one for a whole year.
That's because we're so seldom awake.
Babies, me too. Oh, my. Hold me tight.
I'm going to hurt the big one this time.
My.
It's been months and months now that you've forgotten us.
Oh, the last time. Let me see now. It was Easter morning. The church bells were ringing.
Easter? We didn't go out that day. We both had very bad cold.
No, but you thought of us.
Yes. We missed you.
Yes. Every time you think of us, we wake up and see you again.
But we thought you were dead.
No, dear, no. People never die. Only when they're forgotten.
Everything's the same here. The house. The yard. Oh, Granny, I'm so glad to be here. Sir, Grandpa, there's the hole in the door made with your gimlet.
And a good spanking you got for us.
Look, Grandpa. Here's where you used to measure us on the door. Needle, let's see how much we've grown. All right?
My, how you've both shot up. Telltale, you're 3 fingers taller. And you, Needle, 4... No. 5.
And how big and strong.
Feel my muscle, Grandpa.
Well.
Grandpa. Huh? You haven't finished carving little Coco yet.
Oh, what chance have I got when I'm always asleep? Come along, Telltale. We'll do some work on it now in my workshop.
All right, Grandpa. Don't be long, Telltale.
Oh, you're in no hurry.
Yes, but we are. We must be back within the hour. What time is it, Granny?
Now sit down. It's only 12:30.
Granny, the reason why we're here, we've got to find a bluebird. It's terribly important.
A bluebird? Oh, yes, I'm sure we've got one.
Really, Granny? Where? Show me.
Oh, we've plenty of time for that. I haven't had a morsel of gossip in a 12-month.
But, Granny...
Tell me, did Mrs. Angrome's daughter marry the burgomaster?
No, she didn't.
Why? What happened?
Mrs. Van Kroon married him herself.
Merciful heavens.
Please, Granny, can't we go now and see about the bluebird?
All right, child, if we must. We'll look in the birdhouse. It's right over there.
Oh, thank you, Granny.
There you are, dear. Birds of all kinds, all colors. You may have any one you like.
Isn't there a blue one?
Yes. Yes, there's a blue one. That one up there. Singing.
Why, Granny, he isn't blue. He's black.
Strange. He always looked blue to me.
There isn't one here. Not a single bluebird.
Won't one of these do?
No, no. Granny said it must be blue. She said to look everywhere. This is the past, isn't it?
Yes, dear. But perhaps your bluebird isn't in the past. And you'll have to look somewhere else.
I must go then. Tell-tale. Oh, tell-tale.
Needle, what do you think? These little carved figures can whistle.
I know that. Come on, we've got to go.
Wait, you can't go yet. You haven't heard my little figures whistle. Listen. Anything you like. You name it, Needle.
Can I whistle a hymn?
Oh, hymns are for Sunday.
The farmer and the dell hen?
Oh, who wants that silly thing? How would you like Lady O?
That's the only one they play.
Well, that's the one I wanted anyway. Granny, you used to sing that to me in my cradle, remember?
I remember.
You? Why, you weren't even born.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
You sing, Measle.
Lady O, say a happy jingle, Lady O. Get a happy tingle, Lady O. Maybe every single care will go with a Lady O. Yo, lay, lay, hoo. Yo, lay, lay, hoo. Yo, lay, lay, hoo. Yo, lay, lay, hoo. Yo, lay, lay, hoo.
Fine. We really got to go now. Come on, Jojo. What time is it?
It's still 12:30.
Oh, my goodness. Something's wrong. Jojo, we've got to run.
Oh, Jojo, you said you wanted to learn to carve.
I do, but I haven't got time now.
Wait, children. I'll bake you the biggest apple tart you ever tasted.
We haven't time, really. We'll come again.
Oh, he'll forget.
I promise.
Goodbye, Grandpa.
But don't wait too long to come
goodbye,
again.
Daddy.
Oh, goodbye. Super. Goodbye, darling. Think of us often. You don't know how much it means.
They're gone.
Always in such a hurry.
Oh, I'll never get this carving finished. I'm beginning to get sleepy already.
I am, too. It was nice of them to... think of us.
And wait, isn't it? Perhaps it won't be so long till next time.
Oh. Poor Granny and Grandpa. We were sorry to leave them. But we just had to get out of the past. We'd have had to stay there ourselves forever.
And is that the end of the story, Shirley?
Oh, no, Mr. Pryor. When we got out of the past, life was waiting for us and took us through the most wonderful, exciting adventures. First, we went to see Mr. and Mrs. Luxury. They lived in a great big palace where everybody has everything they want. Everything but the things they really need. And then, flight took us to the land of the future to visit with the children who weren't born yet. That was the most beautiful place of all. It seemed just like heaven. Everything was soft and blue, and you could see for miles and miles. And the children were all dressed in blue, too. And then Father Time came and called out their names. and they sailed down to earth with him in his boat. And from way down below, you could hear the most wonderful music. It was a song of all the mothers waiting for their children. It was all so beautiful, Mr. Pryor, that sometimes when we were making the scene, I almost cried.
And what was the most exciting scene in the picture, Shirley?
When Tylette, the cat, turned the forest against us. Then, when we were going through, those great big trees reached out their arms and tried to catch us. And the vines tried to trip us. And the fire chased us. And the river almost swallowed us. But we kept on running and running because we just had to find the bluebird.
And did you finally find the bluebird, Shirley?
Well, it's a big secret, Mr. Pryor. But I guess I can tell you. In the end, I did find my bluebird. And I hope for everyone that's listening that they find their bluebird, too. And then you'll hear your bluebird sing a song of happiness to
beautiful. It's the nicest Christmas present you could have given me.
Thank you, Mr. Eddie. And if you want to give me a nice Christmas present...
Uh-huh, yes. What?
Well, will you please sing A Silent Night?
I will if you'll sing it with me.
All right.
Wishing you all the happiest Christmas you ever had. Have you a word for your friend, Shirley?
Oh, yes, Mr. Eddie. Dear radio audience, this has been a very exciting Christmas Eve for me. And Mr. Maeterlinck, can you hear me away over in France? I just love playing in your wonderful story, The Bluebird. And now, I just want to say to my friends at 20th Century Fox and to all the neighborhood good golf dealers everywhere, a very Merry Christmas to you and your families. A Merry Christmas, everybody.
Good night, Shirley, and Merry Christmas to you. And ladies and gentlemen, remember, it's only in the Gulf Theater where you can meet all your favorite stars. The greatest motion picture stars working together. In the next few weeks, for example, we'll bring you Betty Davis, Spencer Tracy, Humphrey Bogart, Claudette Colbert, Charles Boyer. And be sure to make a date right now for Gulf's big New Year's Eve party here next week with Eddie Cantor, Gene Autry, Joan Blondell, Bonita Granville, Mr. Guffey, Eddie Cantor's latest singing discovery, and Oscar Bradley and his Gulf Orchestra. Listen in, won't you? Good. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying good night for your neighborhood good golf dealer, wishing you the best of good health, happiness, and Merry Christmas.
Nelson Eddy's current picture for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer is Balalaika. Oscar Bradley, conductor of the Gulf Orchestra, wishes to express his appreciation for the splendid cooperation of 20th Century Fox's general musical director, Alfred Newman, who composed and conducted the beautiful score of the picture Bluebird, which opens as a roadshow January 19th at the Hollywood Theater in New York City. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Here's an extra moment of fun with Shirley Temple singing the satirical hit, I'm Gettin' Nuttin' for Christmas. She played a spoiled child in The Bluebird, but a young child working on Christmas Eve who had just had her life threatened by a crazy lady did an amazing job. Enjoy a few laughs with this recording from the 1930s.
I'm getting nothing for Christmas. Mommy and Daddy are mad. I'm getting nothing for Christmas.
Been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. Please join us again next week for another hour of holiday entertainment from the golden age of radio. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS, and look for us on YouTube also. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.